This is In Play Radio from William Hill. William Hill leads the betting industry in sports podcasts, with top names previewing thousands of matches, games, races, frames, legs and innings every year. Listen to the podcast at williamhill.com/podcasts or subscribe via iTunes by searching William Hill Podcasts in the music store. In Play Radio from William Hill.
Hello everyone, welcome along. You're listening to the Australian Open Tennis Podcast here. It's Dave Kellner in the studio with Sky Sports commentator Nick Lester on the line to look ahead to the season's first slam. Nick, first of all, good morning.
Hi, Dave. How are you doing?
I'm very well, thank you. Happy New Year to you. The Australian Open, always the first slam of the season, obviously, and always comes early on in the calendar as well. It's always a point of debate whether we should have a slam this early on in the season. What's your standpoint?
I mean, it's difficult. The primary reason it is this time of the year is for the Australian holidays, because everyone's off in January pretty much in Australia. The schools are off and everything like that, so that's why they tailor it for this time of year. Of course, it used to be in December, so they have switched it around a little bit. I mean, I think, to be honest, Dave, I think in terms of, you know, you look at the numbers that are coming through the gates, they're pulling in record crowds each year that grows. So I think the argument for that, in terms of a player perspective, is probably quite valid. But I think in terms of a fan perspective in the Australian summer, the where it is, it sits, I think it's perfect. And listen, you know, it's the same for all 128 players. Let's be honest about it. It's the way it is. I think that the one thing that does differ, obviously, with the Aussie Open is, I think, you know, it's hard to read a lot into the warm-up events. You look at the French Open, we have three big Masters before. You look at Wimbledon, we have Queens. And even if you lose first week of the French, you still have time on the grass. You look at the US Open, we have a good three or four big, big events going into the US Open, whereas here we have nothing. I mean, let's be all, with all due respect to Sydney, Auckland and Brisbane, they're 250s. You're not going to really read a lot into those events going into the Aussie. So I think that is where, from a betting perspective, certainly, it does make it a little bit difficult, because you will struggle to really find guys in form because it's so early, as you say, in the season.
Nick, how do the courts play in Melbourne? What sort of player is suited to the surface?
Well, it's fascinating you say that, because traditionally the last three or four years it's been very slow, Dave. It's been a very gritty court. Now, what I mean by that is the balls are bouncing very, very high. The balls are also fluffing up a lot early in matches. So therefore, we change the balls obviously every 7 and 9. But what it means is, on the Australian Open surface, because it's very gritty, after 4 or 5 games, the balls are getting the balls are fluffing a lot, Dave. And what that means it's harder to hit through the courts. So that is the way it's been. But this year we have a new ball at the Aussie Open. We have a Wilson ball that they're playing with. And everything that I've heard and all the people I've spoken to on site in Melbourne over the last couple of days say that this ball is a quicker ball. Now, you might say, well, what the hell are you talking about? How does the ball differ? Well, it does. Some balls are lighter. Some balls have less ability to fluff up. And this Wilson ball is flying. Now, Brisbane last week, Federer and a number of players said it's the quickest courts they've encountered in a while. Mm. I think the Aussies have actually said, you know what it's like the last couple of years. We've been talking about the surfaces, the nature of the surfaces, how they've been all the same the last couple of years. We need to get some variety. And I actually think the Aussies have made a move this year to say, okay, we'll buy into that. Let's speed it up a little bit. The courts may be a very similar surface, but I think the balls are going to be a little bit quicker. And we might just see the guys with the bigger serves and the bigger games being able to hit through the court a bit more, and just negate the good movers that we know are on tour nowadays.
Interesting, very interesting. We'll start off by looking at the men's. The draw came out last night, and Novak Djokovic has hardened at the top of the betting. He is in from even money to 5-6. Odds on for the tournament, Nick, and he seemingly has the ability to peak early on in the season. He has won this title 4 times, and he's won it the last 3 years, so 3 years straight for Djokovic. What is it that gives Djokovic the edge here, the ability to peak early on in the season?
Well, I he takes the Andre Agassi route, Dave. Andre Agassi was a guy who also enjoyed a lot of success in the latter part of his career at the Australian Open. He decided not to play any warm-up events. Agassi put in a really good pre-season, a really good December, having had a long season, and he didn't play any warm-ups. He came straight in. As we know, Australia can be very, very brutal, Dave. The forecasts for the first 3 days of the tournament are 35 degrees, 40 degrees, and 34 degrees. So we're looking at a very hot start in Australia. Therefore, Djokovic says, okay, I want to be as fresh as I possibly can be in terms of matches going in. He played the warm-up event in Abu Dhabi, just an exhibition, just to get a feel for a couple of matches there. Again, read nothing into that. But traditionally, the last couple of years he's won, he's not played the warm-up event. He's kept it simple. You know, this is a guy as well last year, Dave, who played less events than anyone in the top 10, Djokovic. He played the least amount of events of anyone. So as much as he's winning, he's keeping his schedule very light as well. He loves this surface, we know. He's very happy there. The fascinating dynamic with Djokovic, obviously in the off-season, is he's bringing Boris Becker into the team. Well, you know, I have to say, it's a bit of a head-scratcher for not just for me, but a lot of pundits who follow the sport. It's going to be interesting to see what Becker brings. I mean, you look at Djokovic last year. Three times he missed out on a major. Won the Aussie, semi-final of the French Open when he lost to Nadal, hurt. Wimbledon final, lost to Murray. He lost to Nadal at the US Open final. I think he's brought Becker on primarily, not for any tactical game, not in terms of his game style. That's not going to change. I think he's brought Becker on for the big moments. He said, look, let's look back at last year. I had a fantastic year, but I only came away with one major. I missed out on my main goal. Becker was a guy, as you know, who really was a man for the moment. When it really came to push, came to shove, he was a guy that pushed the shoulders back and stepped up. And I think Djokovic is looking for the extra 1% that Becker perhaps can bring to him. Whether he can, I'm not sure. You know, Boris has had a slightly underwhelming, let's be honest, post-tennis career. So it's going to be fascinating to see how that goes. Whether he upsets the apple cart a little bit, which some people think he may do, we'll see. But whether it is able to provide that extra 1%, it's going to be interesting to see.
As you say, it's a weird appointment because you think about Novak Djokovic, and ever since he went on the gluten-free diet, how strong he's been mentally in pressure situations. To bring Boris Becker in because he has said he needs that mental edge, or he thinks that Becker can provide him with that mental edge, it's a scary proposition and a scary thought.
It is, and we don't know. You know, the thing I find fascinating, I think, about the movements in the off-season, Dave, obviously we've had Michael Chang come in, we've had Stefan Edberg come in, we've had Goran Ivanišević come in. It's not just Becker. There's, you know, this is almost an 80s reunion, as you know. And I think that the thing that's fascinating about it, for me as well, is that in sport nowadays, as you well know, so often we're looking for that minute detail. We're looking for that extra 1%. And yet these guys come in with no coaching experience whatsoever. None of the scientific side of sport these guys bring. They only bring the ability to say, I've done it. This is what I did in my situation. This is how I came through across the line. This is what I'm going to tell you what to do. Now, coaching in tennis, I think more than anything else, Dave, is about chemistry. Lendl and Murray were the perfect fit. They are the same personality. They're both pretty sort of, how you describe, sort of fairly, on the outside, fairly downbeat characters, but they're both, when you get between the lines, they're a laugh a minute. And I think that they're very similar personalities, Dave. So, what is Becker going to bring? I don't know. I'm not sure. But I think Djokovic doesn't need that much more. It's not going to change his game. Look at the success he's had in Australia. The only concern I think that I have and that other people have is that Becker will bring something into the mix that actually isn't required. And that's the dynamic we're going to have to see.
He has contracted in the betting, though, about Djokovic, and that's mainly down to the draw. It looks a standout draw for the Serb.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, really, it's Laszlo in the first round, Tursunov, Gorbis, Fognini, these are the seeds I'm calling out here. Gasquet not been in great form. Vavrinka obviously was a set and 5-2 up on him last year in the round of 16, so that's a possibility, a tricky one. But you've got to like his draw. He's going to be very happy, I think, with the way it's panned out. He's avoided Nadal, Murray, Federer. Those big three are all on the other side. Tsonga, Del Potro, top half's loaded, Dave. I think the bottom half where Djokovic finds himself in is certainly a little lighter than perhaps the top half.
Rafael Nadal is in the betting at 11-4. He was 9-4 last night, but he has drifted on the back of the draw. He showed that he's fit and ready to go with a win in Qatar, but he did look a little bit rusty in a couple of those matches against Peter Gojovic and Tobias Kampka, and he's now the only one of the, in inverted commas, big four without a star coach. He has had treatment on his knees in the off-season, Nick, and he's adamant that that has helped with the pain. And at the back end of last season, he absolutely dominated the US Open series. Rafael Nadal, 11-4. What do you make of his chance this week?
Well, I would agree with you. The draw is tricky. I mean, as you say, Bernard Tomic in the opening round, if you look at the players that are in his section in for order for him to get through the early rounds, you're looking at Malfis, who obviously, as you say, took a set off him in the final of Doha. You're looking at someone like Hewitt, Nishikori, Ryanich, Dimitrov, Del Potro. Those are the names that are also not just in his half, but in his section. So he's been drawn a tough lot as far as that goes. What do I think of his chances? Again, I really wouldn't read too much into Doha. What I would read into Doha, David, is that he won it. It was a very typical Nadal week, wasn't it, in a way? Didn't play that great initially, but just found a way to get through in the end. His competitive nature saw him through. I mean, you know, I was going through some numbers last night, just looking down at the rankings, and it is remarkable, really. Nadal and Djokovic together have very nearly 13,000 points. They have 12,500 points. The third-ranked player in the world, Ferrer, has 5,000 points. Now, what does that mean? I mean, just to underline the dominance of those two players last year, they are almost double, in terms of double points ahead of anybody else in the rankings. And that is to think, Dave, that Nadal didn't play Australia last year and lost in the first round of Wimbledon. So two majors that you take completely away, and Nadal still has almost double the amount of points that number three Ferrer has and number four Murray. So, you know, it was a year, perhaps the greatest year I think we've almost ever seen from any player. And I know we've said that a lot over the years. We've said that about Federer, we've said that about Djokovic. But I think Nadal's year last year was obviously, I don't think anyone expected him to come back in that way. I've got to be honest. I think even looking at the draw, I do expect him to go deep here. I really do. I think if you look at his runs in Australia, he's played pretty well over the years. Yes, he's had a couple of injuries. But, you know, as we have said consistently, Dave, I think the top four, the top three are some distance ahead of everybody else still at the moment. And I don't see Nadal really being challenged in the early rounds.
Andy Murray is in the market at 8-1. Murray obviously missed the final 2 months of the season after undergoing back surgery. But even before that, things hadn't gone smoothly following his win at Wimbledon. And Nick, that was something that you expected. When we talked about the US Open, you thought that he might struggle to cope with the enormity of his performance at Wimbledon. And that's how it panned out, really. Where is he now, Murray, both mentally and, even more importantly, physically?
Listen, you're right. I don't think this break could have come at any better time for Murray. I really don't. I mean, with all due respect to September, October, and November, the autumn, there wasn't a lot for him to gain. He achieved his career goal in winning Wimbledon. If he has to retire tomorrow, as he has said this week, he will be happy in many ways with what he's done and what he's achieved. Where is his career at? Where is his game at? Well, he's fit again. That's the good news. He's fresh. That's the good news. Look at his record in Australia, Dave. It's phenomenal. It really is. I mean, I was going through it last night. Final, semi, final, final. The last 4 years. I mean, this guy's done everything but win this tournament. Now, let's turn the coin over and say, okay, let's look at what he's done the last couple of months. How is he gonna be able to get match fit and match tight in the space of 3 or 4 months? It's going to be tricky. Sorry, 3 or 4 matches. It's going to be tricky. He hasn't played a five-set match, and I mean a full five-set match, since he played Badasco at Wimbledon, Dave. So that's 6.5 months ago, very nearly. So in the heat of Melbourne Park, when it does come down the distance, then you do have to be a little bit concerned. The good news for Murray is that he played Leighton Hewitt last night. It looked 7-6, 7-6, a couple of tough sets in there, so that's good news. And I think, you know, the draw's been kind. Goes away to first round, qualify, Lodra, Lopez, nothing to really worry about for me there. Then you look at maybe John Isner, who's playing very well at the moment and is someone who I quite fancy to go well in this tournament. But it's a good matchup for Murray, that. Murray will always find a way to put returns into play. So I think the draw's been very kind to him. You know, I do think in terms of the year as it pans out, I expect Murray to kick on this year. I really, really do. I think if he can be more consistent outside of the majors, he'll certainly get closer, I think, to the top two. No doubt about that. And I think, you know, I see no reason why Murray can't have a good Australian Open. I think he's fresh, which is huge. I really do. I think he's hungry to play again. And if he can get match tight, which is a big if, I would agree, I expect him to make semis here at least.
Looking through the draw, Nick, you mentioned John Isner maybe in the last 16. Looking at that quarterfinal matchup, it could be against Joe Wilfred Tsonga. Tsonga beat him in the Mubadala Tennis Championships, but that was the first time that Tsonga had beaten Andy Murray since the Aussie Open. I think it was back in 2008 when he shocked him. It's a good matchup for Murray, isn't it, Joe Wilfried Tsonga?
It is, but again, having mentioned Isner, I think I actually looking at my two players, I think that certainly in terms of the feeds that are outside draws, I like Tsonga this summer, Dave. I really do. He's played well in Australia. He was not fit at the end of the year. In fact, he was shocking. I remember being in Bercy commentating over there at the end of the year, and he looked awful. He was unfit. He was overweight. He wasn't moving. Tsonga, as you know, is a dynamic player. If he lights it up and can get hot, his forehand can take you out of the game, his serve can take you out of the game. You know, you've got to remember, Tsonga was the last player to beat Djokovic at the Australian Open. He did that in five sets in 2010. So this is a guy who likes this surface. I think he feels happy in Australia in terms of the environment. And I always talk about this, players need to feel comfortable in the environment. And I feel with Tsonga, Australia very much is a good fit for him. It's almost that sort of free spirit. And that's the way he goes. He's got a new coach, Nicholas Escudé's working with him now. Again, it's one of those ones where if you look at his draw, great draw to start with Valandri. I mean, Valandri's an absolute shoo-in. He's got a horrible record on hard. Then you go Gilles Simon. Interesting match possibly, but again, Tsonga's a sort of player that should beat Simon. And then you're looking at perhaps Federer in the last 16. I like Tsonga at this event. He's sort of my wild card, if you like. Mm. I really do. I think he could come through this section here. I think you could well see him in the final. Again, we don't know. It's one to watch. Is he fit? I hope so. I think he's certainly a lot further than he was in the autumn when he wasn't fit. But I think Tsonga is a danger here.
Juan Martin Del Potro is in the market at 12-1. He was the only one of the top four in the betting playing in Sydney this week. And he's, at time of recording, he's in that final against Bernard Tomic. He's not yet realised his enormous potential, in my opinion. Nick, he's not yet been past the quarterfinals in this event. Is he starting to look a little bit underpriced at 12-1, Juan Martin Del Potro?
You know, it's funny, I was going through some research last night and I was looking at Del Potro specifically, and I've gone through his last 2 years. Last year, Del Potro's loss at the majors were to Jeremy Shardy and Leighton Hewitt. Yeah. Now, you remember he played Djokovic in the semifinals of Wimbledon, Dave, so that was a fantastic match. But those two defeats say a lot. He has not beaten Del Potro, one of the big four, and I'm including Federer, of course, in this big four. He has not beaten one of the big four since he won the US Open in 2009 at a major, Dave. This is the question mark that surrounds him. Last year, Del Potro beat Djokovic, Nadal and Murray across the board at all tournaments. He's not done it at a major, and that is the disappointing part of his game. He is starting, for me, to look as though it may be possibly a one slam for him. You know, I hate to use the word one slam wonder because that's disrespectful, but, you know, of course, is he almost, the longer you feel it goes on, the more you feel that becomes an issue for him. You know, we have seen him play Shanghai last year, lights out tennis. This guy can play unstoppable tennis. He beat Nadal there. He nearly beat Djokovic in Shanghai. Courts were quick. But there is still this lingering question mark over him and his ability at the majors to beat the very best players back-to-back, which he hasn't done, Dave. And, you know, and that, for me, it's still where he's at. Is he going to be a guy that's going to be ranked 5-6 in the world? The older he gets, the more years he gets on the board. Australia's not been good for him, as you say. 7 appearances, only 2 quarterfinals. Now, I agree, there are a couple of times where he's coming back from injury, but that's a lightweight return for me, and he's got to step up.
Yeah, definitely. 12-1, Juan Martin Del Potro. Roger Federer, 20-1 to win this slam. He has won it 4 times before here at Melbourne. And last year was the first time in 11 years he has failed to reach any final in the slams. There's definitely been a feeling, I've read it in the press, that his best days are behind him. But he seems intent to prove the doubters wrong, bringing in Stefan Edberg in the off-season was a major move for Federer.
Fascinating, isn't it? Edberg was invited to Dubai for a week to train with Federer in November. Obviously worked out. He's his idol, Dave. Federer said Edberg's my idol, always has been, a guy he looked up to when he was younger. What can he bring to the table? Well, the obvious thing you think he can bring to the table was Edberg was the best volleyer the game's ever seen, probably. So then the automatic assumption is to say, well, okay, Federer knows he can't beat these guys from the back of the court. He can't beat Nadal from the back of the court. He can't beat Murray and Djokovic. He simply can't. We've seen it. We've seen the evidence. Last year, the last couple of years, he's not able now to beat these guys from the back of the court. So if he gets the opportunity to play Murray, Djokovic and Nadal, is he going to come in? Is he going to take a chance? Easier said than done. We can all sit here and say, oh, he needs to come in more. These guys are the best movers we've ever had in the game. So you're not exactly, you know, but what is Edberg going to bring to the table? He doesn't arrive in Melbourne until Sunday night because Edberg's actually got some prior commitments. So we're going to see. You know, I've always been in the category, probably like you have, you don't write Federer off. We know how much he loves the game. Pretty good start to the year in the final at Brisbane. Bad final against Hewitt. You know, I have said, and I stand by this, I don't think Federer can win any major now other than Wimbledon. I do still think he has a shot at Wimbledon. I genuinely do, because of the nature of his game, the way he plays on grass. He is injury free now, we hope. Again, the back injury was a major problem last year, underestimated, I think, by a lot of pundits, and he said that himself. You know, he wasn't healthy last year. Is that a bit of a bluff? I don't know. Listen, for me, as I say, I don't think he can win the Australian Open. I just don't see him beating Nadal or these other guys on this particular surface. But what Edberg's going to bring, we're going to see. You know, the bottom line, Dave, is, you know, people can say, why is Federer still playing? Why shouldn't he retire? He loves playing. It's plain and simple. And you know what? I think you have to admire that.
Yeah, definitely. Federer, 20-1 for this slam. We've been through the top five in the betting, Nick. Which outsiders would you follow? Pretty keen on Joe Wilfred Tsonga. He's 33-1.
Yeah, I like him. I think he's playing well, as I say. A couple of names for you. Alexander Dolgopolov, extremely unpredictable, but starting to play well. He's hired Fabrice Santoro as a coach. Interesting dynamic again, because Santoro, as you remember, was a guy that sliced and diced all the time. And that's in the Dolgopolov mold, of course. I like him, possibly. Nice little draw as well. Shardy, Ferrer in there. I think he could be one to watch, possibly. Vacek Pospisil is a name who improved vastly last year. Watch him. Certainly, maybe watch him, you know, throughout the year. I think he's 28 now, seed. He was 105, I think, in the world last year. And I also like John Isner, and I think he's got a game. And one other name for you here, who I do think is going to have a big tournament, and I do think hopefully will improve this year, is Milos Raonic. Seeded 11 in the Nadal section. Could face Dimitrov in the third round. That would be fascinating. Huge serve. If the balls are flying like we're told they're in Australia, he's going to benefit. So I think the big servers you're looking for to come through in the early rounds, I like Raonic, possibly as well as, again, someone that could go deep in this event.
Like it. Those guys, just to go through their prices in the outright, Vasek Pospisil is 250-1. Alexander Dolgopolov in the betting at 300-1. John Isner, 150s. And Milos Raonic, 80-1. Look at those guys when the match betting comes out to get through the opening couple of rounds. Half the odds place 1-2 in the outright market. Just summarise your outright thoughts then, Nick.
I think Djokovic is a favourite. Obviously, the dynamic of Becker coming on board is an interesting one. I like his draw. He loves playing in Australia. Obviously, he has such a good record there. I think you have to put Djokovic top of the tree for me. And maybe I'm possibly thinking there could be a surprise in the top half, maybe a surprise finalist, maybe a Tsonga or a Raonic, who knows. I think we could see a surprise finalist. So for me, right now, I'd look at a Djokovic. If I'm really laying my money on the table, a Djokovic-Tsonga final.
Good stuff. Let's move on to the women's side. Serena Williams, 4-6 favourite. Victoria Azarenka, 5-1. Maria Sharapova, 10-1. Linar in the betting at 12s. Petra Kvitova is 20-1. Angelique Kerber, 25s. And it's 33s bar. We'll start with Serena, 4-6 favourite for the event. And in the lead-up, her camp pretty bullish. Her coach has already said that he believes she can win all four slams this season. But let's not forget, she was a similar price for Wimbledon last year before being knocked out by Sabine Leshicki. And she was knocked out in the fourth round here by Ekaterina Makarova in 2012 and in the quarterfinal by Sloane Stephens last year. So 4-6, it does come with a few stipulations.
Of course it does. You know, I do almost feel a little bit like we could almost play the US Open preview here, couldn't we? Nothing's really changed, Dave. Let's be brutally honest about it. In the last 6 months or so since the US Open, nothing's particularly changed. You know, Serena's going for what would be an 18th Grand Slam. If she were to win here, incidentally, she would actually tie Steffi Graf and Chrissy Evert in terms of open era. So, you know, this is the company she's keeping now, and I think people are really starting to talk about the greatest of all time with Serena Williams. And I think, I'm not sure we've had that conversation before, really. You know, perhaps started back in the last year a little bit, but I think people, that's the sort of company she's keeping. Going back to the points you made about, obviously, Leziki and about Makarova and about Stevens, I don't disagree, but plain and simply, that's sport, isn't it? That's how I watch it, you know, because you never quite know. She's made a good start to the year, obviously winning in Brisbane, exactly the same as she did last year, exactly the same in terms of beating Azarenka in the final. You know, let's be honest about this. She owns the field. She owns the field in terms of she is going to be the player to try and find a way to get through. Now, look at her draw. First round, she plays Ashley Barty, a young Aussie wildcard. She'd be okay there. Seeds-wise, Hantikova, Stosur, Ivanovic. Interesting one. Anna Ivanovic in that little section. She's played very well. She won Auckland last week, so she's in good form. But again, you're kind of picking at straws, aren't you, a little bit? You know, it's not rocket science to say she's a very strong favourite, Dave. Is she a 4-6 favourite, as you said? Probably not, to be honest. No, because there are hurdles to get over. So then you're looking at a bit of value, and then I suspect we move on to someone like Azarenka.
Yeah, let's go there now. 5-1, Victoria Azarenka. Drifted from 3-1. She was 3-1 yesterday. She's 5-1 now. She's been dominated by Serena Williams in the past. She's only won 3 of her 18 meetings against Serena Williams, but interestingly, she has won 2 of the last 5, which I think more recent form holds more weight and more gravitas.
Absolutely. I think, you know, of the two players, I think if you're looking to stick a tenner on a player on the women's side, Dave, I think you have to, the 5-1 on Azarenka is a very, very good price, isn't it? I mean, you look at the way she's played. Obviously, she played very well in Brisbane. Again, you know, if you look back at the sort of matches they've played, as you say, as well, if they were to reach the final, I remember the final in Cincinnati in late August last year, obviously, which was superb, and Azarenka matched Serena shot for shot. And I do think as well, Dave, that if there's one player on tour that Serena, not feared is the wrong word, but perhaps has the most respect for, it is Azarenka. So, you know, I do think that she has that in her favour. She obviously has a little bit of an issue with the crowd, because you remember at the Australian Open last year she was roundly booed when she took that injury timeout against Sloane Stephens in the semi-finals, but when she was down, I don't know if you remember that. So there is a, you know, she does have a little bit of PR work to do in Australia, but I wouldn't be too worried about that. You know, she's a fine player. She's a fine competitor, and I think at 5-1, that's good value for me. That's good value.
Yeah, it does look good. 5-1 on Azarenka, 10-1 for Maria Sharapova. She does have problems against Serena Williams. Following her defeat to Serena in Brisbane, she's now lost their last 14 meetings, and that's not where the problems end for Maria Sharapova. Coming back from her second serious shoulder injury, and she's on to her third coach in the past year now. Nick, what's going on with Maria Sharapova?
Well, I mean, to be fair, she's actually got a great coach. Sven Gronefeld, who I know pretty well, is one of the most laid-back, sort of mellow characters you could possibly wish to meet. And I actually think, well, I certainly hope that'll be a good fit for her. What's going on with her? Well, injuries, as you say. You know, she spent the entire autumn off. She's actually going to be in Sochi for the Winter Olympics, working as a correspondent for NBC, which was a slightly head-scratching decision. I'm not sure what that's all about. Of course, she's originally from Sochi, so that's partly where it's come from. But let's focus on Aussie Open. I mean, as you say, it's tough to really... She is the third best player in the world right now. The rankings don't lie here. She's the third best player in the world right now in terms of where her game is at. What is Sven Gronefeld going to bring to her game? Well, again, we'll have to wait and see. You know, let's be honest about it. And again, you and I have discussed this over the years. There's not many nuances in Sharapova's game. It's generally hit it hard or hit it harder. You know, that's the way it is. There's not a lot to it. So what can he add to her game? I'm not 100% sure. Again, you know, I have to just got to be honest. I think Sharapova is someone for me who I wouldn't be putting a lot of stock by this event. Again, her draw, tough draw. You know, she plays Cornet possibly in the third round if she gets there. Good French player. Just won the Hopman Cup with Songa. So she's in good form. Someone like Suarez Navarro in there, Castell. You know, she's got a pretty tough draw. She's avoided Serena Williams. But again, for me, Sharapova, you know, is the third best player in the world. But I don't see her winning this event, if I'm absolutely honest.
She's 10-1, Maria Sharapova. A couple of points bigger in the betting. Linar is 12-1. Very consistent profile, Linar. I was looking back at her results last night. She's made the final here in two of the last 3 years. And she didn't win a title last year, but won in Shenzhen for the second straight year. So she comes into this with a remarkably similar profile to last year.
And she should have won here last year, Dave. You remember she fell over in the final a couple of times, knocked her head. Actually, not a lot of people know this, but she actually blacked out in that final when she did hit her head. So, you know, she should have won here last year, Dave, plain and simple. Great start to the year, as you say, beating Peng Shuai in the final in China. A really good start. Consistent last year again. Look at the end of the year. Look at the way she's playing. Final of the WTA Championships in Turkey, where she was a setup on Serena Williams, remember, in that final. This was only 2 months ago. So she's playing good ball. Look at the wins she had at the back end of last year. In that event, she beat Kvitova, Azarenka, Yankovic, Irani, without dropping a set to any of those players, Yankovic's side. So, you know, she probably, in truth, behind, you know, with Sharapova out of the picture, was as consistent as any player last year. Semis of the US Open, as you say, where, disappointingly, I thought she might have a good shot against Serena Williams. Serena duffed her up in that semi-final. But, you know, enjoys the conditions. Obviously, Carlos Rodriguez, as we've talked about, a very good coach. She's very mature now. She's been a grown-up a lot as Linar. I think she's got a big shot here. I genuinely do. And again, at a decent price, you know, you're talking to 20-1?
12-1.
12-1. Good price. You know, good price for me. A woman who's played well here in these conditions, Dave. And I think as well, someone like her, she knows she's probably only got two more years really at the very top of the game. So every single event counts.
Nice try trying to get 20s though, Nick. I appreciate that endeavour. Petra Kvitova is 20-1. She is 20-1. And she sometimes gets a bit tight on serve in pressure situations. And that was certainly the case against Laura Robson last year when she was knocked out by Robson in the second round. It was, if I remember rightly, it was very windy that day, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, you can make that argument for her, but again, there's been too many of those times, weren't there, last year for her when there was an excuse, and quite frankly, that you just don't buy it after a time. So yeah, there was. Kvitova is just for me a nightmare. I've got to be honest. I think her game is, you know, it's very, very good, but again, she's almost becoming the sort of one Martine Del Potro of the women's game, isn't she? Having won that slam at a very young age, and in the last 3 or 4 years has really not been anywhere near as consistent as we would like her to be. You know, in terms of her start, again, looking at the way she's going to get herself into this event, probably fairly decent draw initially. She plays Kum Kum from Thailand, which she should get through. Then she faces a couple of potentially tough matches, Flavia Panetta, early doors. Angelique Kerber is in her section, that could be a round of 16 clash. So there's some difficult matches in there for Kvitova. And again, if I'm gambling and putting my money down, she's not the first person I'm going to in this event, I've got to be honest.
No, that's fair comment. What about the British Challenge, just before we move on to some of the outsiders you like? Laura Robson's in the betting at 300-1. Heather Watson, who has to come past Irina Falcone in the final qualifying round to get into the draw, is in the betting at 200-1. Robson, first of all, is she fit? Is she going to be fit for the event?
You know, I had a very interesting chat with Miles McLagan about 6 weeks ago about Laura Robson. Of course, he coached her pretty much all the way through in terms of last year for 6 months or so. And he said to me, one of the biggest issues Laura has is that she's always ill. She's never fit. She can never get fit. There's always something going on with her that stops her. And he thinks the most important thing is they need to look into that. Now, new coach on board. What's happened at the start of the season? She's injured again. And this is a concern. You know, it is becoming a concern. It's not more of a concern, I think, is the fact that it's actually not the same wrist that it was that she did before. So it's actually the other, I think it's her left wrist that's injured now. So no matches coming into the Australian Open. Nobody doubts Laura Robson's ability to hit a tennis ball. You know, I was fortunate enough to practice with her a couple of times a couple of years ago. And for me, even initially, I was so surprised at how good she was. She is a phenomenal tennis player, Dave, but there is a lot of things going on that she needs to channel. She needs to knuckle down at some point, and I don't know when that'll happen. She's still very young, and say, right, it's up to me now. I've got to make this happen. And I hope she does. She reminded me who she played in the first round. I think she's got a seed in the first round, hasn't she, having listed the draw? I'm sure she had a seed. I think Flipkins, she played first and Flipkins in the first round. So, in truth, it's not a bad matchup. Flipkins is not going to blow her away. But, again, Laura's not 100% healthy, you know, and that is a concern for me.
Yeah.
It's a big year. I think it's a big year for Laura Robson. I really do. I think, you know, at some point she's going to have to start taking responsibility. I hope she does, Dave, because I think she's a top 10 player. I genuinely believe that, but it's up to her.
Heather Watson obviously has to come through that qualifying match to get into the draw. She looks to be playing decent tennis at the moment.
Really well. Yeah, really well. Again, after a horror show of 2013, to completely write that off, I mean, that was a shocker. And actually, third round here last year, if she does come through against Falcone, you know, look at where it could be. And so look at the qualifier slots. Again, we don't know at the time of recording this, as you say, where she's going to be. But Lina faces the qualifier, so she'll probably want to avoid that. Again, we'll see. But, you know, she loves the conditions down there, and we know how gritty she can be. We know how much she fights. And I think, you know, almost New Year's Day was a complete release for her because she can start again. She can forget 2013. That was a shocker. Let's move on. And for her, I expect a good run from her if she gets a decent draw.
Outsiders you like then, Nick? Players that you think could win an early match or two, maybe against the odds?
Yeah, I mean, Eugenie Bouchard is a young, up-and-coming Canadian, Dave, who is very, very highly thought of. She has the look. She looks like Sharapova. She's got a lot of stuff off-court going on. But she's got a game to match. I mean, she's only a teenager and she's seeded 30, so she's one that could really kick on this year. I think Madison Keys, we saw play very well here last year. Another young American, a teenager. They've got a lot of them, the Americans, coming through. And those two, certainly, for me, would be players to look at. I think another player that improved very much last year was Simona Halep, seeded 11 this year. I think she won 5 titles last year. So watch her. She did have an early loss in Sydney, I think, or Brisbane, which was disappointing.
Yeah.
But again, if she gets a couple of wins, I think Halep, those three. Halep, for me, could be the player, if she can get a couple of wins, that could get going.
33-1 for Simona Halep. Madison Keys, 150-1. And Eugenie Bouchard in the betting at 200-1. So maybe look at those three to win a couple of early matches. Just give us your outright thoughts then on the women's side of the draw.
I think the value is in Azarenka. I really do. I think she, as you say, a former winner here last year, in fact, defending champion. So I think she represents a little bit of value. I wouldn't be getting on Serena at 4-6 too early because, again, you know, as you say, as you well know, probably getting to the quarters, she's probably going to be a similar price. So let that get through the early couple of rounds. And then look at where we are. I mean, you know, it's as I say, not a lot has changed in terms of the dynamics with the women's game in the last 6 months. We're not really saying anything particularly new here, but I think Serena obviously starts a favourite. But let's look at Azarenka with threes or fours for a bit of value.
Good stuff. Victoria Azarenka, the selection at 5-1. If you want to do the double, by the way, Victoria Azarenka with Novak Djokovic pays around about 10-1, and if you want to be ultra adventurous here, Victoria Azarenka with Joe Wilfred Tsonga over 200-1. If you fancy that double, and remember you can play that each way double as well. 200-1, Azarenka with Tsonga, not beyond the realms of possibility.
Indeed, not beyond the realms of possibility. Tsonga would have to, you know, have to play the best tennis probably of his life, but as I say, he's capable of doing that if he's dialed in.
Good stuff, Nick. It's been fun talking with you this morning, and I look forward to catching up as the tournament progresses.
Pleasure, Dave.
William Hill is committed to responsible gambling. Visit gambleaware.co.uk for more information.